What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
Nico is a Venezuelan-American entrepreneur who found himself immediately drawn to Bitcoin because of the immense implications the technology has to change the world and himself. He has written reports on proper OPSEC, sent to thousands of newsletter subscribers, and co-founded BitVault.com, a miner hosting company. Nico currently produces Simply Bitcoin, a 10-minute weekday show on YouTube tailored to deliver daily news from the Bitcoin maximalist plebe perspective, and BitVault, the podcast for Bitcoin plebes, which interviews with industry leaders, how-to Bitcoin tutorials, and discussion with developers, miners, exchanges, artists, and traders about the future of Bitcoin, and the smashing article, Bitcoin Gave Me Purpose, published in Citadel 21, Volume 7. Welcome to the Bitcoin Matrix Podcast, Nico. How are you?
Man, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you so much for the invite. I'm excited.
Yeah, man, I'm so excited to chat with you. I just love to really get right into that article right away. I always wanted to talk to you, but this kind of gave me, just so many questions and a foundation to dive into. Right off the bat, you kind of kick it off where you're saying, growing up, I got everything I ever wanted. I drove a sports car, had a model girlfriend, a platinum American Express, and lived on one of the richest zip codes on the East Coast. My parents were a power couple. And then what happened?
Okay, so let me back up a little bit.
Sure.
That article that I wrote, I had to write, and this is the first time I'm telling someone this publicly, but I had to write it and I had to strike a balance between how much information I wanted to give out and how much I could give out in order for the story to fulfill its purpose, right? Sure. And the purpose of that story was to give people hope with the trials and ordeals that I went through. And just if I read that type of story when I was going through what I was going through, that would have helped me tremendously, right? But essentially what happened, right, was the 2008 financial crisis completely shaked up my household, right? My parents were on a very strong footing. They were very well known in the Miami community. That's as much as I can say. I think maybe in the future, depending where I am in my life, I'd be comfortable releasing more. And the more people know about this story, the more striking the story will be. It's just right now, I think for my own comfort, I feel comfortable releasing what I could, right? But Essentially what happened was the 2008 financial crisis started a series of events in my dad's business that eventually led not only to its demise, but the demise of my parents' marriage as well, right? And it's very interesting because Bitcoin started around that time. Right. So I guess you can call it destiny. I guess you can call it, whatever it was, but the least you could say about it is that it's extremely ironic. Right. And, when you grow up with having everything, right. I think a lot of people that haven't lived that circumstance, perhaps give it too much, they romanticize it, because I would say now that I've been through what I've been through, you're a weaker person when you're raised in a golden crib, so to speak, right? I'll give you even more details, right, to the things that you said. My first car when I was 16, I had a Maserati, okay. It's a Maserati, a four-door, is called the Quadra, something like that. And it wasn't a gift, but it was just you know, it was my mom's car. Mom was like, look, just take it. And I was like, sure, you know, and it was brand new. And that really changes a perspective on how it is growing up, right? And, you know, I remember going to this nightclub. It was called Head Candy on South Beach, right? And I was, man, I was 16, 17 years old. I got in with a fake ID and I spent $20,000 on, you know, American Express card, you know. And then the next day my parents flipped, but it wasn't about the money. It was the fact that I went to this like nightclub and whatever. And my mom went crazy, but they just gave it back, you know? So it's a very disconnected reality to what the real world was, right? And then when everything started unraveling and my dad was under pressure to kind of keep our lifestyle up, there was this always present feeling of what was to come. It was always there. It was always very obvious, I guess, in hindsight. But in the moment, I guess you can't see it, right? And then when you start going through this process, I guess at that age, you put a lot of importance on, you know, your family, your empire. I used to look at my parents as if, you know, they were more than human. And then that starts to unravel. And then you start to see the reality of the world, right? And yeah, man, and through that trial and through that tribulation, right, it makes you into a strong person, right? That I, for lack of a better word, because that really is like mentally, when you see the top, but when you see a very well lived life, and then you see a life where, you know, you're worrying about, you know, paying the next month's rent to the point where I was living on my friend's couch, right? You know, it really humbles you and it forces you to do two things, right? Either implode or, you know, get the hell out of that gutter on your own two feet, right?
Right.
So you really got to make that decision. And, you know, if you would have asked me, like, this is the path that you would have taken, this is the path that I would have taken, man, they each have their benefits. But I think that if this wouldn't have happened to me, I don't think I would have found Bitcoin. I don't think I would have been attracted to Bitcoin as I was, right? Because like many other people, especially not in the West, I was attracted to Bitcoin because of opportunity. Right. It gave me hope. It changed everything completely. Right. It changed my life completely. Right. It gave me a reason to get up in the morning. Right. And through that reason, it makes me happy to be part of this revolution or evolution, you can call it, of money, man. And it's so exciting, you know?
Yeah, man. I mean, it's a crazy story. I can relate to a lot of different points. Not in terms of, you know, I didn't grow up rich, but I, you know, was exposed to a lot of rich kids through some philanthropic work in New York City. And I definitely got a glimpse of what you're alluding to. What I'm curious about right now is, so you're on couches and Bitcoin is a glimmer of hope for you. It provides hope, but how does it come to you? How do you find it? And where are you getting hope out of Bitcoin at that point?
Yeah. So like many others, Bitcoin has a way of Trojan horsing people. So, you know, I obviously saw Bitcoin as a monetary opportunity. I was living on my buddy's couch in Brickell. And that was his vacation home. So he was kind enough to just, you know, kind of lend it out to me in an extremely low rent that I had to pay. And at the time, my ex-girlfriend, or the girlfriend that I posted the picture of within Citadel 21, she left me, right? And that kind of, you know, I would say that was kind of like a rock bottom reality check, because before that I was still living in this world of, you know, do the bare minimum and your parents will take care of you. And right. what she kind of did was she softened the shock of what that would be, because she was making decent income herself because of her job, her career. But at the same time, it kept this illusion over me that I don't know if I would have been able to decelerate from 100 to zero what was required of me. But I guess she stopped that extreme deceleration, if you catch what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And she kind of gave it a little bit of a soft spot. But when she left, it was devastating to me, because I was already basically essentially living in New York City at the time. But I officially made the move, and I had an apartment rented out and everything. And, you know, I did something catastrophic. I'll tell you on your podcast, and this is the first time, I don't think I wrote about this in anywhere, the article, but, I was struggling with, can't believe this. Okay. All right. I'll say it anyways. So I was struggling at the time with drugs, because I grew up with drugs in Miami Beach. You know, that's just a very common occurrence. And, one night I overdid it, and I almost died, right? And that scared the living shit out of her. You know, she was a Colombian girl. She's an immigrant, very strong Catholic household. So that kind of, you know, of course, she's been exposed to Miami for many years at this point, and kind of big city life in the United States. But it really took her off guard, and, you know, she couldn't move on from that. And that was kind of a reality check for me. I was like, dude, I really have to get my shit together. So I, from advice from my family, right? They were like, listen, you got to get a degree, and you got to go to school, and you got to work the minimum wage job so you can kind of build up. So I approached my uncle, because my dad was still not in my life at this point. He was still gone. But I approached my uncle, my dad's brother. He was he's a pretty successful entrepreneur himself. I wouldn't say entrepreneur, I would say more like businessman. Mm-hmm. So he had some connections, and he got me a minimum wage job. And that job, I was able to basically pay my buddy's rent so I could stay on his couch, right? But that was rock bottom for me. That was like reality check, like, you know, you're worthless type thing, you know. And from there, man, I was just so hungry for anything, because seeing everything that is achievable at the top,
right,
and then seeing what the bottom is, man, it's like you have this need, this hunger in your belly that's just like, dude, I am willing to do whatever it takes, as long as it's not illegal or non-ethical or anything like that. But I'm willing to do whatever it takes to succeed in life, right? Okay. That hunger is non-existent if you are comfortable, okay? If that hunger comes out of desperation, like, but I'm talking about like desperation like you could not imagine, right? And through that desperation, you rise out like a goddamn phoenix, man. And for me, that phoenix, I guess I got super lucky. You call it destiny, you call it whatever you want, right? My cousin from Venezuela was visiting me at the time, and he's like, look, I'm mining in Venezuela. I'm like, what is that? He's like, these machines, you know, they print you magic internet money. Essentially, he was just telling me that in Spanish. And I was like, holy crap, I want to know everything about that. Through that decision, once I started to learn more and more and just binge on Andreas Antonopoulos YouTube videos, I borrowed as much money as I could, and I had some money saved up from my job. And I hopped on a plane, and I left to Venezuela, man. And that was the best decision I've ever made in my life. And dropping out of college as well, you know, just deciding to take your life completely into your own hands. Extremely liberating experience.
Yeah, that's amazing. Before we get into the mining in Venezuela, because I think there's a lot to really get into there. You know, you brought up a lot during maybe the deceleration of your life, and I kind of want to just maybe ask, well, what were some of the lessons you learned about maybe like the intersection of family and money and power? And yeah.
Okay. So I learned, I guess there are very obvious lessons now, but I guess in hindsight, there's no way to know that. But you don't know when you're who your true friends are until shit really hits the fan. And then those true friends, you know, you could only start to count them in one hand. And also your life kind of changes, right? And I feel, I would say that a lot of it comes from Bitcoin itself, but your philosophy about life is, it fundamentally changes. You can't see that type of life. I can't take that type of lifestyle seriously anymore. I know how to go out. I could go out, you know, my girlfriend loves to go out, but I don't like to go out anymore as much. I like to, you know, create content. I like to, you know, at least mess around on Twitter or lurk on Twitter or go on YouTube. You know, it's a very reserved life, but it's 100 times more productive, you know? And Miami's the type of city that it's a city to have a good time. Like that's what it's made for. It's not made for anything else. Right. So, to escape that, especially like, you know, when, you know, the weekends are a lot of fun, very exciting. There's a lot of fun stuff to do. I would say it never gets old. You can get stuck in that trap, and people do get stuck in that trap in the city. So I guess those are some lessons, right? That sure. I learned.
Yeah. What about with like truth and money? Cause I think maybe we learned a lot about truth through this story.
Yeah. So, okay. So look, I'm a victim of the 2009 financial crisis.
Yeah. What was the question?
You know, kind of, I was wondering, you know, through that experience, how much you learned about like, or not how much you learned, I'm not going to try to put words in your mouth, but did you learn anything about, or see money, kind of through the lens of truth?
Yeah. So you know, before I lost my train of thought, I would consider myself a true victim of the 2008 financial crisis, right? And the fact that no one went to jail for that, right? And they just gave these bankers just bonuses, right? And the fact that this year alone, we printed 30% of the total money supply. And the Fed balance sheet was like $4 trillion in the beginning of the year. Now it's $7 trillion, right? And it's just unchecked, right? The president of the United States just went on, you know, social media and just told the rest of America, well, we want to give you $2,000 in cash. Mm. From where? Where's that money coming from? Right? So Bitcoin has a way of Trojan horsing you through its property of keeping value, right? The more Bitcoin you own, the more curious you get, then you start to run a node, and then you start to think about sovereignty, you start thinking about privacy, and it's like a rabbit hole. It really is. It's perfect, right? And I think that Bitcoin in itself rewards truth, right? Bitcoin is the truth. And if you look at the current monetary system, like let's look at its name, fiat, right? It's like the tells in its name, like it's a bunch of BS. It's bullshit. I don't know if I can curse on the show, yeah, but it's bullshit, right? It's so obviously bullshit. You know, it's like you work your entire life for this funny money, right? And they could just, and it's on video. The Fed admits they could on a print of a, like on a press of a button, it's this unlimited into infinity bzzz, and they just admitted they're going to keep going. It is an article that we covered the other day. They just admitted that they're going to keep, you know, they use like titleese, legalese, you know, to kind of mask what it is essentially they're saying. But I interpreted that article as like, we don't see an end in sight of money printer go burr. And then you start to question like, why the hell am I holding on to this? And man, look, the proof is in the pudding. Look what mutual funds, hedge funds, public companies are doing themselves now, right? You can't no longer take this seriously. If you're a financial advisor and you still haven't told me to put 1% or 2% of my portfolio into Bitcoin, you don't know what the F you're doing, right? Like, you're lost. You're lost. You're going to get fired. You're going to go into irrelevancy, because Bitcoin is as big as the internet was back in 1990s, and people had no idea what the hell what the potential of what the internet could be, and it still took many years for that potential to be reached. So what is the potential of everyone around the world being essentially the CEO of their own bank, having that type of power in their hands, right?
Yep.
Because that's what Bitcoin enables. What type of world would come out of that? I would like to think it would be a much better world, right? But there's no way to imagine that type of future. Like, it was impossible to imagine what the internet would enable 10, 20 years down the road. You can't envision that type of thing. But I know, perhaps I'm biased because of my personal experience and because I found some success. But I don't know about you, but I could no longer put my net worth, my energy, like Michael Saylor likes to call it, into anything that I don't own the keys to, right? Because if you have stocks in like Robinhood or something like that, or you have, you know, money in a bank account, right? I don't need to explain it to everybody. Everybody knows it's fractionally reserved. It's not yours. It's an IOU from the bank,
right,
to you. So it's like you spend all this time acquiring this monopoly money that you don't own versus spending time to acquire the monopoly money to buy more Bitcoin, because you know there's only 21 million Bitcoin. You know that. You could take that to the bank, right? It's yep. it's a sure thing, because if that changes, it's not Bitcoin anymore. There's been so many forks that have tried to do that, right?
Yeah.
Bitcoin is a battle-tested honey badger that's going to devour this system, I would say, in less than 2 or 3 decades. It's going to take it by storm, and it's going to make the other side, it's going to force them to innovate. Right, because they're not going away. I don't think country currencies are going to go away. But what I do know is that now, before there was no option to choose, like, I'm going to go with this currency because, you know, I trust the U.S. Now it's like, I don't trust any of those currencies because their financial policies are absolutely insane. I'm going to put my money in Bitcoin.
Right.
So it creates a competitive environment. Right. It's no longer in the hands of politicians, right? Now it's in the hands of engineers. And engineers are like, this is black, this is white. Politicians are like, this is great because people are going to vote for me, right? Mm-hmm. Even though it's purple.
Right.
So, man, it's very exciting times, man. That's you know, that's how I feel right now. I'm so bullish.
Yeah, me too. I agree with everything you said. I would only tip off on that and say that, you know, Bitcoin is, like you were saying, the apex predator of money. I agree with your internet metaphor and analogy. I very much build on that myself. I'd say it's even a little earlier, as if like internet was like in 1982 and you were trying to get involved with sort of like just telecommunications and anything involved in military intelligence, internet proceedings, that technology at that time. And I'd also go further and say that, but now we're moving even faster. So what took the internet 30, 40 years and email 20, 30 years to do, it's going to take Bitcoin 10 or 20.
Yeah.
That's kind of my opinion, because it's built on those faster rails. So that's where I think things just kind of spiral up quicker. And then you touched on something very interesting. So, you know, the money printing and central banks, right? And your net worth and your energy, because that's how I think about it, is like stacking my energy and my hard work. And I'm not really concerned about investments or speculation. That stuff's all gravy to me. It's just the 21 million and my bringing my share of energy into the pie. But so now we're turning to you, though. And it's like, so now you get to go to Venezuela, and not get to, like, you know, it's like you win a trip or anything, but you end up in Venezuela somehow, and you get to kind of feel like what it's like to make to be a central bank. You get to make some money, you get to print some digital money, and feel like a central banker. I mean, that must be feel awesome. And how did this all come about?
So this is what I learned, right? What I learned was I got basically a college course of business and business management and a scope of, I would say, 1 or 2 years. And it was a crash course. And it was like, you either survive or you just burn up in the atmosphere. I learned about electricity. I learned about computer, everything about a computer, hardware wise. I'm not so good at software. But, you know, to the point where, you know, I could build and maintain a farm on my own. But in the process, man, I spent a lot of money on that learning curve, man.
What was that process like? I mean, I guess your uncle says he's mining.
I'll walk you through it. So,
I mean, what do you see a mining machine and you're like, holy shit, what, this is cool.
I had no idea, you know, I had no idea how these things work. So before I left to Venezuela, what I did is I tried to set one up at my home, right?
So you guys talked on the phone.
Yeah.
Okay. And he's telling you what he's doing and you're now trying to replicate this at home.
Exactly.
So on your own.
So before I left, right? Before I left, I was like, okay, how do I do this? I was so excited. I was so hyped up. I bought one. And the first time I tried to set up a miner at home, mind you, I had no experience with computing or anything like that. The thing overheat. Right. So then I learned the next time just to keep the room cooler. But then it was like, what happens if you put two in a room? It's not about keeping the room cooler. It's about the airflow. Right. So I learned those things on my own. Then I left to Venezuela. And first thing my uncle told me was essentially, look, can't pay you a dime. OK,
sure.
But I could teach you. And I was like, OK, sure.
It's worth more than money sometimes.
I learned a lot. I spent half the money that I had at the time, which was essentially nothing, on a couple machines. I left the rest in Bitcoin. To be honest, I did shitcoin sometime because it was back in 2017. So I'm class of, this was the beginning. No, it was before 2017.
So what, I'm kind of curious.
It's like mid 2016.
You buy these machines and what do you got to do to get them up and running? You know, just, you know, not BitVault style, but, you know, like, you know, is it plug and play? Are you coding? Are you, how different is it to go from one kind of coin, you know, well, let's say just how to go from Bitcoin to a shitcoin?
So
is there a lot of, you have to learn to kind of move a new.
Yes. So it depends. Look, every machine mines a specific, So let me kind of give you the context of how mining evolution kind of played out, right? So first, Bitcoin, you'd be able to mine it on your computer on a CPU, right? Then it evolved to GPU, and GPU essentially is much better at solving a problem very quickly, right? And then it moved on to something called an ASIC, which stands for Application Specific Integrated Circuit, right? Which means it's a very fancy and long technical way. I hate technical things. I'm very good with concepts. I hate technicalities, but it's a very technical and fancy way to say this computer chip does one thing, but it does that one thing really fucking good, like 1,000 times better than the GPU, because the GPU is multi-purpose. And then the CPU is even more multi-purpose than the GPU, right? So it was like this evolution very quickly over a span of like a decade of this arms race, right? And when I got into mining, I was never a fan of GPU mining, but when I got into mining, I went straight into the ASIC world, right? And I focused mostly, miner that I focused and I dealt with the most was the S9, which was, it's called the miner of the last epoch, right? And the setup is very simple, man. The setup is you have a power supply, you plug that power supply into the miner, to power the miner. The miner has an Ethernet port on the front of it. The machine makes a tremendous amount of noise and it makes a tremendous amount of heat. right? So you need to...
What kind of size are we talking about?
It's... Give me a second.
Sure. Or, I mean, is it bigger than...
It's like about this size.
Okay, right? Okay, not that big. And you know, what would a unit like that from the last epoch cost now?
Now, like 80, 90, 150 bucks?
Nothing, right?
I suggest anybody... You could use it as a heater. You have cold winters, buy a miner. Why are you paying for heating? Get paid to heat, right? So it's not necessarily profitable, right? You might not make a profit, but you might cut your power bill. You know, right.
Say it's not profitable, let's say that I don't even know what, like, let's say that somehow this machine I'm going to estimate costs me $10,000 a year to run. That's enormous, but let's make that up. Or maybe it's $1,000 a year to run. And am I going to get like $300 in Bitcoin? Am I going to get 50 cents in Bitcoin? I'm losing money, but I'm creating heat. Like, what are we talking about? And I'm talking more than maybe if you spent $10,000 to get going or $2,000 to get going.
So I'll do the math real quickly. Right now, $10,000 would get you about 2 S19s. Right, they're running for like $4,000, $3,000 right now. It's the best. My S19 Pro sold out by Bitmain. Bitmain just raised the premium 20% on pre-orders. Right, how crazy is that? And man, those machines would make you. Last time I checked, which was like a week ago, make you between 17, 16 bucks a day on 5 cents kilowatt hour, which is a very not an extremely competitive electricity rate, but is a pretty decent rate, especially in the continental United States. So like 5 cents per kilowatt hour, China's getting like 3. Iceland, I heard they're getting 2, but 5 cents is like a good estimation. So with 5 cents, you're making around 16, 17 days, $17 worth of Bitcoin every day per machine. So that's 40 bucks a day for an $8,000 investment. But here's the catch, right? And the hash rate is a really good representation of that, right? And the hash rate continues to go up. So what's that telling you? That means that miners, right? And mining is extremely capital intensive because we're at the point where you can't just take a miner and plug it into a wall. It'll fry your socket like this, right? The sockets are designed for 120 volts. Miners run like 240. And if you're not running at a 240, it's not good. And you're not hashing at full potential. And, that $40 cost, that $40 profit with electricity costs included, right? That could multiply by a factor of 10, right? So now you're thinking back on mining, because this is how the huge miners got so wealthy, right? So quickly. Let's say Bitcoin 10X is, which we all think it will, right? That $40 a day from that $8,000 that you invested in machines and plus infrastructure is going to cost you a little bit more than that, right? Now it just became $400 a day. And now do $400 a day times 30, right?
Right.
So that investment of $8,000, now that makes total sense. And that can happen very quickly, right? So when... I would say to mine in a bear market, it's a bitch. I almost didn't survive. I had to go back to working some real estate on the side because it was absolutely terrible, right? But when you're mining in a bull market and you have enough experience to prepare for the bear market, nobody knows what's going to happen in a bear market, but at least prepare, know that it's coming. It's an extremely profitable endeavor, man. Here's the catch. If you have the good electricity costs, if you don't have good electricity costs, you're screwed. There's nothing you could do. You need to go send your miner to a hoster. There's plenty of them. And they do everything for you.
Yeah.
Right. I do that as well. Right. So,
I really want to dig into that. But before we get there, because I'm really curious with the mining questions I have now, especially in the context of the show, I love hearing the numbers and the profitability, but it's not so much for me to get the idea that I'm going to go mine and make money. It's more about like, I'm kind of curious how things work, how things are built, what the learning curve is like, and how things are happening, especially the things you're involved in. So before we get into Bitvolt though, and everything you're doing, especially you kind of brought in a lot of things. And one of the questions I want to kind of thought bubble there that I have is when you mentioned something like $40 a day return, and return is not the right word, but $40 a day Bitcoin, I'm wondering, is that an average rate over a period of time where you maybe get $600 payment, or is it literally you're getting $40 in Satoshis a day to your wallet? And maybe hold that for now, because I really want to jump back to Venezuela.
Okay.
And kind of learning a little bit about, I think, mining there, and you're even, I think, mining in the out in the bush.
Yeah. So my uncle's setup out there, it was a really strange time because at that time, the black market rate in Venezuela compared to the official rate was just a joke. So what that would create was artificially cheap goods, because at that time the economy was still not dollarized, right? So we, at the time, you know, they officially, since then they kind of legalized it, kind of, but not really. Essentially, it was the Wild West. Like no one knew. There was people that had them, but no one knew the potential. You know, when you have free electricity and you have machines that literally make you money, you know, it really creates this environment of insanity, right? Yeah. But we didn't want to attract attention. So the farm that my uncle had was literally in the middle of nowhere. It was literally in the bush. It was like a chicken coop. It was a chicken farm before, but there was generators. We even got to the point where, I wasn't there for this, but from what I was told, they, like, one day they were messing around and they kind of jiggy rigged the helicopter to try to see if they could power some of the miners. They couldn't get it to figure it out. But when I heard that story, I was like elated, right? I was like, this is fucking crazy, right? That you're able to do this, you know, at the expenditure of electricity, and you get rewarded this brand new sovereign fucking currency. And this has nothing to do with the government, because when you earn cash, you get paid for a job, whether you like it or not, you're getting paid in government money, right? But, you know, you're mining, and you're creating, essentially, you're being rewarded by the network for your computational power. And no matter who you are, where you're from, where you're located, right? And Bitcoin mining requires very little bandwidth, and it does not require high internet speed. It's very minimum. What it does require is a tremendous amount of electrical infrastructure, I would say air management, and just cable management. The cable management is so important, or you're just going to drive yourself crazy.
You mentioned something about, you know, you're out in the bush. You said at a base level, I get that you don't want to draw attention to yourself. And I was listening to your pod, I think it was Bitcoin, What's Up in Venezuela. And it was a really compelling episode. I encourage everyone to check it out. And, you know, even like someone mentioned, like, you could be in a shopping center and, you know, you might hear a buzz in the back of a shop, and, you know, and a Bitcoiner would know what's up. And so imagine you're out in the bush to kind of avoid all kinds of attention. But is it the kind of situation where if attention is put upon you, that your lives or your assets or your you know, you might be in jail kind of thing, or they might take your stuff?
So I'll tell you why I left. When my uncle was importing machines one day at the customs place, he asked where the machines were, and all the people said, "We have no idea." And they started seizing them, to the point that it was funny because it would come up on like live TV over there with like people, instead of drugs and the police officers with guns, it was like seized machines, police officers, you know, as if the machines were going to kill anybody. Right. So I got the hell out of Dodge. I went to South Carolina, and like, that's really when I really got off the ground, because everything back then, that all belonged to my uncle. That was just kind of like a learning experience. Mm.
How did you scope out South Carolina? You know, maybe you don't have to reveal your secret sauce, but
I could tell you a lot more about that because my uncle's still mining in Venezuela. So that is a danger, but I could tell you a tremendous more info on the South Carolina, but I got very lucky because I used to be in real estate, commercial real estate, before I went full-time crypto, I guess you could say, or Bitcoin. And this guy, essentially, very older gentleman, right? I don't know if I could reveal his name, but he made his money designing carbon or composite materials for the military. Okay. And he bought a bunch of real estate in, I would say in a town that borders between Georgia and South Carolina. And one of the properties that he bought was this old pantyhose factory. And when I saw that, my eyes lit up like a Christmas tree. And I hit him up. I'm like, have you heard of Bitcoin mining? And he's like, no, what is that? And I'm like, look, it's essentially machines that print you money. And I went over there. I took a flight with my partner, which I bought out since then. And we went to go check it out. And man, when I say the place was perfect for mining, it's like at the time they designed it like in the 1950s, I guess. They must have known eventually this was going to be used for mining because it had the transformers. It had hot air extractors. It had the electrical infrastructure in place because of the working stations from, I guess, the people that I would put this together. I don't know, but it was all there. Right. So it was because a lot of people don't understand, like, look, if you want to run machine in your garage, OK, fine. Try running 10. You can't do that anymore. You know, you need to change everything. Right. So the electrical infrastructure, the infrastructure in general, I would say it's a big cost. Right. But when you could reduce that cost as much as possible and you're getting a good industrial electricity rate, you know, that is a good mixture for a long-term mining operation, right?
Yeah. I mean, it must be wild to build something like that. So let's turn to BitVault. You know, you guys have a passion for all things Bitcoin mining. Mission is to provide hosting for all cryptocurrency miners, educate through the podcast BitVault, and foster a community for new Bitcoin adopters and veterans alike. The vision is to create a platform to assist and guide people into entering, navigating, and thriving in an ever-growing future, progressing towards mass adoption of Bitcoin. Welcome to the dark side of the moon. There's three of you involved in this, from what I gather. When my first question, you know, I'd love for you to just maybe start at the beginning, but like, I'm really curious about this word hosting in the context of your business.
Okay, so that's a great question. So, look, you want to mine, right? But you want to mine more than 10 miners, right? Eventually, whether you learn this the hard way or the easy way, it's irrelevant. You're going to get to a very simple conclusion of, where I live, it's too expensive and too loud. Maybe you have a big house, so maybe that's not a problem, but it's too expensive to mine because I'm paying residential electricity costs. I solve your problem. I say, listen, just put your miner with me, pay me a steady monthly fee, like $5-$10.
So this is physical hosting.
Yes.
Got it. Okay, keep going though. That's where the coin drop for me in terms.
I could either buy the machines and set them up for you, or you could buy the machines yourself and then send them to the location that I tell you.
The customer client, myself, we get access to this facility, you know, to put our equipment into it. Not physical access to it, but I mean, like, the equipment resides in the facility.
Yes.
And physical access is then provided to the equipment, to whatever you can physically provide to that space.
Correct. But perhaps if it's a very large client, we will make an exception.
No, I wasn't trying to, you know, say that. I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to infer your business allowed people into the building. I just meant that the equipment was there.
Yes.
And so you're physically hosting it. And then you could work out whatever other arrangement, I'm not talking about physical access, but whatever arrangement around electricity, whether you're buying it, acquiring it, shipping it, whatever, I'm sure. So I don't want to put words in your mouth. Maybe start from there. Yeah. Like,
yeah. So we don't handle any of your coin. Okay. We just plug in and run your machines. You give us an address and we will point the mining rewards to that address. And you know, you could check your mining pool dashboard all you want. We'll just take care. We'll point everything where you want us to point it. Right. But that's it. All we're doing is we're charging you for
this is awesome
for the you know, the space and the infrastructure that we provide, but everything on top of that, man, it's, you know, it's hands off for you, right? It's a very, you know, obviously you give away some of your mining profits, but you know, you also take away the risk of, you know, investing in the necessary infrastructure for you to mine yourself, and good luck finding a good price. Okay. Good luck finding a good industrial electricity price in the United States.
Yeah.
Right? So, because what happens with a lot of people don't know, and I'll reveal it to you, right, is that mining works, right? The reason that it works back in Venezuela, the reason that it works in South Carolina, is that mining thrives on isolated energy production, right? Because if not, that energy would go to waste, right? So it's like natural gas where they have to burn off the top, and that, you know, that flame ball goes off the top. That's excess energy that they're burning because they can't use it. So imagine if you direct that energy to Bitcoin miners, right? That energy is going to be tremendously cheap because it was already going to waste. There's no one else buying it, basic supply and demand, right? So that's how it thrives, right? So, so yeah, man, like that's the key, right? Is isolated energy. And there's so many pockets of isolated energy around the world that it's like I guess that mining death spiral, you know, coming from the mining world, when I hear that, I'm like, you guys have no idea what the fuck you're talking about. You know, first of all, because of the difficulty. And first of all, and second of all, because of the way that mining works. Mining can't work in a city where everyone's trying to get the same pie of electricity because that electricity is going to be too high and you're going to be outcompeted by someone else who has much cheaper electricity. Right. So it's beautiful. It's the solution is beautiful, man. And once you understand that part of Bitcoin, it gives you a very unique perspective to a lot of people, because a lot of people are just used to using the, you know, the network, and but they're not used to the hardware side of the network. Right. And it's just the largest computing network in the world belongs to Bitcoin. Right. And it's completely decentralized, and it does one thing, and it does one thing very well. It secures the network. It secures the fuck out of the network, and it makes every transaction after 6 confirmations, right? I think 1 or 2 is good enough at this point, but I'm a little biased there. But after 6 confirmations, it makes that transaction completely immutable, right? So, man, it's the higher the hash rate, the higher I see the hash rate, the bigger the smile on my face, because I know the price is following it right after. That's the value proposition. That's the value proposition. That giant network securing Bitcoin, acting like its bodyguard, is what gives Bitcoin value. That's what makes it valuable. You know, you got this giant machines that are running 24/7, securing, making sure that everyone else is playing fair, right? You know, and the government thinks that they could just regulate this out of existence. Like, they have no idea what's coming to them.
I agree with everything you just said. My mind is still kind of hung up on what the value proposition that BitVault provides as with this physical custody. I'm still kind of really enthralled with this. In my opinion, you know, if I was to tackle, I want to launch a mining facility. I want to get going. I think I'm ready in terms of whatever it needs to do it. And I'm not saying I am. I'm just saying, let's say, hypothetically. What this provides to me is so much more than just the value proposition of energy. I mean, physical security, it shortens the learning curve. It gives, you know, sort of validation or confirmation around, you know, kind of that learning curve and getting up to speed, getting running.
It's a total white glove experience.
The logistics. Send
me the machine. I'll take care of the rest. So, I'll take care of maintenance, security, setting it up. You don't have to worry about anything.
Yep. So I think this is tremendous value, and I'm excited about it. One of my questions, though, just conceptually.
So let's say we do all that and we tick all those boxes. Let's say I either buy the machines, I buy the best machines, or you buy the best machines for me, ship them in and get them up and running. Machines are up and running. You call me up, you're like, you said, they're up and running. Things are looking smooth. I'm like, awesome. Now I'm like, what can we do to do better? Like, is it now, like, and maybe there is nothing, but is it really plug at that point, whatever's going on, are there things like, you know, is it airflow? Is it some sort of, are we running script or code, or to look at different blocks or compile different blocks to win this battle? Like, how can I, you know, besides power?
That's a great question. Okay. All right. So, okay. So the nitty gritty.
Just conceptually, okay. I'm not building this. I'm not doing this, but like, what is this idea? So I want to win the race. I want to win it more often. And with the equipment I have.
Okay. So the first thing that you need to do is you need to pick a mining pool, right? Then essentially what a mining pool is, so you can visualize it, is a bunch of hash rate is pooling together so that their probability of finding the next block is as high as could be possible. And therefore, as a miner, I know that statistically, I'm going to get paid a steady rate, right? Because the biggest mining pool, I think it's like 22%. So the probability of you finding the next block, even if you're the biggest mining pool, which is a good thing, by the way, is 22%, right? So the first thing that you need to do as a miner is pick a good mining pool. We, by default, we mine with Antpool. We use their miners. We like them. We have a good relationship with them. But we usually, a miner ships with a default firmware, right? So it's a very basic firmware for you to connect to the miner on the on your local network and to point it, to tell the miner where to point that hash rate, right? That work that it's doing, where should it point it? What pool should it be going to, right? That computational work that it's doing, where should it be pointed, right? We change that firmware because what tends to happen is that the manufacturer themselves could play with the firmware a little bit so that their miners are out competing other people's miners, right? So it's little tricks of the trade like that, you know, once you get to a sufficient side, I would say you need to make a proprietary firmware or use someone else's that was really good, right? And then that's kind of like when you start to, I would say that's like kind of like the next level, because you start to do these things out of necessity because you want to squeeze as much profit out of these things as possible, just to kind of give you like how bad these things fluctuate. In December 2017, the S9 paid you back in a month, literally. You broke even in a month. That's unheard of when you buy, at the time it was $1,800. You buy an $1,800 miner and that thing pays you back in the same month, or I think it was a month and a half in December 2017. That's literally unheard of, right? But then you have bear markets, right? And you see this in the drop of the hash rate. The hash rate indicates the struggle that people are going through where, you know, it's not enough to cover your power bills, right? The biggest mining consortiums, right? I can't do this, but the biggest ones, they have enough money to burn. So they can go in the red for a month or two just to get as many people off the network as possible, right? So there's a lot of things going on in the infrastructure of Bitcoin in the background that a lot of people don't appreciate. But what you need to know as a user of the network is that all of that infighting and the power of, you know, getting more and more hash rate and trying to, you know, to send dead blocks to a competing pool so that their work goes to waste, all of that helps you because it makes the system more secure. It's an arms race to be better than anyone else, but the benefit of that is the Bitcoin network, right? That's what makes it so robust.
Yeah. So you brought up a lot of questions there for me around this firmware. So like, you know, in like stock trading and these huge hedge funds and, you know, a lot of it, you know, the secret sauce became the algorithms and the engineers and the coders were really the you know, the nuclear weapons there, even though the traders and those kind of salesmen were making a lot of the money, there became a hot market for those guys. And as people realize that maybe they can't just get paid hourly, these guys are really bringing, you know, the firepower to winning these trades, or whatever they're using with their algorithms, front running trades, front running exchanges, whatever it is. But is there like, you know, maybe it's not a huge market, but maybe a highly competitive market for these programmers who can alter the firmware? Or, and maybe even in terms of, maybe these guys are secret magicians who don't want to reveal themselves because they're winning, you know, kind of maybe how the best traders don't always tell you what they're going to trade.
Not necessarily, because it, all it is your optimal, your, you know what overclocking is on a gaming computer?
No, I don't. And we'll get it. Yeah. We'll talk about gaming if you want to, because I know you're a gamer.
So like essentially when you get a graphics card, you know, when you ship a graphics card, there's something called the Silicon Lottery, and the same thing applies to a miner, by the way, same thing. And the Silicon Valley, the Silicon Lottery, the reason it's called that is because by factory default, they have to promise you a certain amount of hertz that are running through the chip, right? This is essentially how many cycles of electricity go through the chip, right? So let's say they promise you like 2000, right? In reality, that's the base level. That's what the lab or the production facility tested the chip to, right? But the Silicon Lottery is essentially how much could that chip overperform, right? And that variable is absolutely crazy, right? So I said 2,000, that could perform up to 2,500. It could perform to 2,100. It could perform to 2,700. You don't know, right? Mm-hmm. Every miner is the same thing, right? It says like 53 terahashes, but that's what it's promised. Most of the time it's a little bit lower than that. Some of the time it's more than that. Every miner is different, right? But the reason that you want to get it, in our case is proprietary, but in most cases, the reason that you kind of want to use another, not the default firmware, is because you're putting a lot of trust into the people that are making the machines, and the people that are making these machines are making these machines out of the kindness of their heart, right? Every machine that they sell essentially buys them three machines, right? Like that's how much profit they're making on these goddamn things, right? So, man, like they're not really incentivized, you know, it's very sneaky. So to answer your question, it's very easy to find firmware for the different miners. It's not hard. We just decided to kind of, you know, take something that was already out there and kind of tweak it to how we like it.
I kind of ask in the context of, you know, and I haven't gone down the mining rabbit hole fully. So, you know, it's kind of, so, you know, like ASICs, you brought up ASICs before, and we're going from like CPUs to GPUs to ASICs. And, you know, ASICs are these specially created devices just to mine Bitcoin or crypto, but, you know, here it's just Bitcoin. But, you know, I mean, that's kind of like, you know, imagine, and I'm wondering, like, could the person who invented the ASIC just kept it to themselves, not commercialize it? Or, you know, I guess not. Maybe that, you know, you can back into that technology through just, you know what I mean? The kind of the question I'm asking in terms of, you know, someone working on a next device, a next level device that may not be released. Are there people working on the technological aspects of mining that are secret sauce, that are just in their own right genius level talent, but not necessarily at the forefront of moving Bitcoin, you know?
No, absolutely. It's a really great question. And look, there's a tremendous arms race to be the best, right? What's Miner, Bitmain, InnoSynicon.
Right. Bitmain, you know, did Bitmain invent the ASICs, or was it one of the people
It's a natural evolution, right? The ASIC has been around for a very long time. It's just a very simple circuit that does one thing very well.
So it was kind of dug out of the trash heap and brought back for this?
It was just perfect for Bitcoin because the thing about GPUs and CPUs, right, which is the things that power the, you know, the graphical.
Yeah, you know, video gamers couldn't get their cards anymore because Bitcoin moved to GPU.
Okay, yeah. So what happened with Bitcoin was very interesting because the evolution took 10 years of this computer evolution, what it took essentially to reach full optimization, right? And I'll get back to that. It took Bitcoin 10 years and it was an overdrive, which is part of, this is a big reason why there's such an over concentration of miners in China, which is decreasing as Moore's law is being hit by the latest manufactured mining device, right? In the old days of Bitcoin, the beginning of Bitcoin, I wasn't around back then. You know, you used to be able to mine it with a computer, but then it got to the point where it's like, now you needed a supercomputer. Now you needed the latest GPU. So it kept trying to evolve naturally towards the most efficient way of mining Bitcoin, right? And we hit that, right? So now the lifetime of a miner is no longer 8 months, 9 months. Now it could be 2 or 3 years, right? So now it's like there's an incentive to ship these miners out of China, right? Before there was no incentive, which is why there's such a big concentration. So the ASIC application integrated specific circuits, that very long technical jargon that I told you, I don't like technical stuff.
Right.
That technology has been around a long time. But what was happening before was when Bitcoin first started, when Satoshi and Hal started running Bitcoin, you could just do that on your computer.
Right. It's like turning on a faucet.
There was you're not competing against someone else, right? Mm-hmm. There's no competition. You were going to get that block.
And you were probably operating at a loss.
You're operating at a loss because you had no idea this thing was worth any value. So you were doing work for the network.
Spending electricity and your time at a loss, you know. I think that was an incredible investment by those two of their time and their efforts. And, you know, obviously hats off to both. I'm really enamored with Hal and obviously Satoshi. I've really just been really Hal's kind of been a little rabbit hole for myself, just his involvement in everything, his reaction to everything, his predictions very early on, really amazing. And I still wish he was here. I'd love to turn to, you know, you live in Miami, you've lived in New York. I think you had a stint in China when you were younger. What's going on in Miami? Should we, you know, I think Pomp was just down there. I saw him with the mayor on Twitter.
Yeah. So, what a lot of people are figuring out, is that, you know,
my folks aren't too far away.
In
Northern Florida.
Now that people have figured out that you could work remote and you no longer have to be in these centers, right? People are tending to flood to states with less regulation, right? So you're not seeing, you're not only seeing a exodus of Pomp, but you're seeing before that it was, I think, Elon Musk, Joe Rogan, Oracle, Goldman Sachs, you know, they're all moving their headquarters or their operations from states that have high taxes to states that have little to no, you know, regulation compared to their other states. I just hope they don't bring those, you know, ideologies here and raise the taxes, because clearly they didn't work over there, right? I guess it's exciting for that. But other than that, I lived in Miami all my life. Can't wait to get the hell out of here. I'm probably going to go to Puerto Rico. That's my plan. My girlfriend already part-time, she already lives there. So that's most likely where my life is heading. But I think I need to spend a couple more years here to kind of figure things out, you know, and hopefully have enough to buy myself a Citadel in Puerto Rico.
My wife advocates a lot for Puerto Rico. She's not from Puerto Rico, but she's visited. And when I talk about, you know, flag theory, and that was actually something I wanted to touch on with your business, is I think it provides flag theory for people around a lot of different issues, just in terms of physical domicile of your business, as well as electricity. Really helps to diversify your physical presence, which I think is great. I think Puerto Rico or kind of, you know, I mean, I'm really, I have a lot of, I'm inspired to pick up and go in a lot of regards and travel, but also maybe see or settle somewhere else for a little bit, maybe somewhere warmer. And that's kind of interesting. I wanted to turn to is like, I kind of see you as like being of the Bitcoin lifestyle or culture. You know, people talk about it a lot. I think you really just are it in a lot of ways. And what really gave me that conviction to say that was listening to your pod about, you know, what's going on in Venezuela and the camaraderie amongst the group, but the conviction there and everyone kind of declaring their Bitcoinership or, you know, being part of the community. So what does that really mean to you, you know, in 2020? three, four, five. I forgot in the beginning, like when you started mining before 2017. I think you started mining in 2017, but I think you went back to Bitcoin in 2014 or 2015. You've been potting for a while. What does it mean to you from like, not so much like what does Bitcoin mean to you, but what does it mean? Like, what is the lifestyle or the culture of Bitcoin?
So I'm class of 2016 for anyone who's wondering. That's when I started to mine. But I really got off the ground in 2017. I feel like that was the year that really, I guess it went well for me. It's very simple. And you see this with people. Do you own your own keys or do you not, right? And once you, like, for me at least, and I'll dox myself a little bit here, 99.99% of my wealth is in Bitcoin. Okay, I'm all in Bitcoin. I wouldn't do it any other way because I like being the owner of my energy, my future, my wealth. And I run my own node. And if you do those things, you will talk like I'm talking and you will feel like I'm talking and you will be as intense as I guess I am sometimes because you'll understand what it means to be sovereign. No time in human history has the individual had so much power. Right? Bitcoin is incredibly liberating and it's an incredibly powerful technology. It takes the power, the centralized power, out of the hands of a few and it gives it back to the people, to the point that even in 2017, with the biggest mining consortium that had the biggest war chest of Bitcoin at the time, wanted to take over the network, they failed miserably. And we all know how Bitcoin Cash is doing, right? So that is what it means to be a Bitcoiner. Like, that's what it means. Just do you hold your own keys? If you do, you will feel like I feel. It's not even something that I'll tell you. It's like you will understand why that's valuable. Why should I keep money in a bank? Why? They use your money. They use your money. They tell you they use your money, but they still charge you a $10 fee, right? And yeah. I always say it's a badge of honor to have gone through a couple overdrafts if you're a Bitcoiner. Like, it's a badge of honor, right? It should be something you should be proud of because it's any money that you have in there, it's a joke, right? And in Europe, they already started flouting negative interest rates to the point that if you have your money in a bank there, they're going to charge you to keep. How absurd does that sound? If you tell that to a five-year-old, the five-year-old say, that's stealing, right? What they're doing is stealing. They're charging you to have your own money, your own energy, your own time and effort into their system. And they've exhausted this system to the point of like, there is nowhere else to go. Right now we are in uncharted territory. Everyone's acting like it's normal. We printed 30% of the entire US money supply this year. No one is saying anything. This is unprecedented. This has never happened before. And everyone is acting. This is the absurdity of modern monetary theory, is that modern monetary theory, what it essentially means is we're going to go with the flow. Whatever works, works. But we actually have no idea what the hell we're doing, right? Bitcoin, I know for the next 120 years what the monetary theory is going to be. No matter who's in power, no matter what ideology, no matter what religion, I know that in Bitcoin, this is Bitcoin, no matter what, right? And man, the guys on the other side have no idea how badly they're gonna get devoured by this idea. Because that's what it is. That's what makes Bitcoin special. It's an idea, right? And people like you, content creators and podcasters and meme lords and all that stuff. This is so important in the fight that's to come, which is the boss fight, the ultimate fight, right? Which is the US dollar, right? The Bitcoin needs to dethrone the US dollar, but the US dollar isn't going to just go kindly into that good night, right? So we need as much information in this battle to empower everyone else, right? And man, I'm just so lucky to be alive during a period in time like this.
Yeah, it is an inspiring time. It gives me so much hope and optimism. I don't think I would have that without Bitcoin right now, or I would have the hope that we would figure out a Bitcoin in the future. I don't know what we would need to figure out without Bitcoin, because Bitcoin gave me a lot of the answers I've been looking for when I've been seeking truth my whole life. We circle back a little bit to, you know, like Bitcoin, like this year for me really became like hip hop, where it became more than just like a way to save money. It became cool again. Not that Bitcoin became cool again, but like there was something cool about Bitcoin. Bitcoin was cool. Like you're wearing a Bitcoin sweatshirt. There's Bitcoin art now. There's Bitcoin music. So I was kind of like just trying to like, do you see that? Like where, like, you know, it's like Bitcoin's a part of my identity now, where like I'm going to wear that like a really proud badge of honor. And I don't really wear badges. I don't want to wear no one's name on the back of my shirt, like a football jersey. You know, no one's name but mine's going to be on my shirt. Like, but like, you know, there are things I like to be associated with. There are things I maybe not identify or label myself as, but I'm just like, yeah, man, I geek out. Like, I'm a Bitcoiner.
Yeah. So I think that Citadel 21 perfectly, encapsulates the Bitcoin culture that's promulgating. And we do our best to cover it on Simply Bitcoin when we do the meme reviews, but there's the new counterculture is personal responsibility, right? Bitcoin changes your ideology. It pushes you more to the right, but it doesn't make you necessarily conservative, right? But what it does, there's a lot of right-leaning principles, because when you're a Bitcoiner, you're in your own political class. You're in this orange lifeboat when the red party is fighting the blue party, and the blue party is fighting the red party, but you know they're two sides of the same coin, right? And Bitcoin is just sitting there kind of like, you know, in this boat saying like,
I think it's a class above. This is not a political class, but I agree with everyone you're saying.
It's crazy, right? Yeah. And it creates like this is the most hopeful thing I've ever seen this year. Every single tweet by a banker or the European Central Bank, or like any hypocritical tweet from an economist, from whatever, the Bitcoin army just showers the truth all over that feed, right? And that's exactly what we need to be doing in this war, man, this information war. We need to be bombarding the other guys, the institutions, right, the powers that be, with the truth. And then the truth is going to come out. People are naturally attracted to the truth, man. So it's freaking crazy, dude. It's crazy. And this is just going to keep on escalating. Like, this is not going to stop anytime soon.
Yeah. My final question for you, you know, I'll frame it up like this. Like, you know, in Judaism, the Jewish sages, they believe that, like, you know, even if a billionaire lost everything, it's the community's responsibility to get that person back to where they were. Because that person became accustomed to that lifestyle, and they kind of feel broken until they get back there, if they ever do. So it's not like in the Jewish community, you don't believe like, hey, let's take someone down and keep them down. You know, it's if someone falls from grace, we get them right back where they were, you know. And, you know, for someone who grew up and got like the chance to drive his mom's Maserati, you know, I drove my mom's, you know, 3-year-old Saturn when I was a high schooler, and I got the free gas that she would load up and I would take it down and empty. She'd like, where'd you go last night with 350 miles around the town, you know? But, you know, like, so what, like, I'm assuming you're already there. Well, I don't want to put words in your mouth. And I don't know if it's like, you know, I don't know if like you felt like, oh, when you got that chance to drive the Maserati, like, yeah, that's just what I'm going to be doing now, because that's who we are. Or like, it was like, we won the lottery and my parents, because you would mention they were like more than human to you. So my assumption there is like, wow, like I'm really lucky that, you know, they got this opportunity or created this thing for me.
So, look, again, I think in the future, you know, perhaps in like 2 or 3, 4 more years, we can come back and I'll be more comfortable to dox even more personal information as time goes by. Answer that. Dox. Man, growing up with money was the most debilitating thing that could happen to a human being, because it unchecks your, you have no incentive to sacrifice, and you need to sacrifice, you need to suffer. You know, to go back to the Jewish mage thing, man, no one helped me. No one steered me in the right direction. No one gave me good advice. If I would listen to people's advice, I would have a quarter of the Bitcoin I have today. So no one helps you. No one helps. No one. This is why I, like, you can call me very right leaning in this type of mentality, but man, I don't think you deserve anything from anybody, and you don't need to give anyone to anybody. It doesn't mean that you're an asshole. You know, I always say, like, you know, to strangers, I'm a capitalist, but to my family, I'm a communist, right? Because I give everything, right? And I don't mind, you know, being and giving money to my family, giving money to my girlfriend, and spending money on that. I don't mind at all. But to a stranger, like, why should I help you? No one helped me, right? And to go back, and I'll dox myself a little bit, right? My dad came from, I wouldn't say nothing, because I've seen nothing, right? But I would say almost nothing. And he made himself into a very successful man. That's all I'm going to say about that. Yeah. But in the process, he spoiled the shit out of his kids, so that when his kids lost everything because of the circumstances at the time, it didn't prepare them for what I learned later was the real world.
Right.
But at the same time, you call it destiny, you call it fate, you call it luck, whatever you want to call it, I don't care. I ran into Bitcoin at the lowest moment of my life. It saved my life because it gave me a new founding purpose. And I promise that I will give my hash rate back to the network. And I promise I will educate as many people as possible on the truth of this real hard money.
I forgot to mention that last question at 27 parts. So you mentioned your uncle, you know, maybe, you know, was your uncle, you know, when he said, I was like, he'll like, you come down here, or, you know, he gave you advice on the phone, but he's like, I'm not going to give you anything. Was that him, like, in a way, giving you something? Like,
no.
You about to know.
No.
Okay.
No.
Fair enough. Okay. No. Fair enough. All right. And then my next question then is, and maybe this is the final one. So, you know, that moment when you get the Maserati, right? And just, let's just encapsulate that moment. It's a great moment. Maybe it's like some, at that point in your life, maybe it's some sort of pinnacle.
My life,
it for me, it represents. Let's use it like that.
It was, though. It okay, was.
Got it.
Yeah.
So is there, and not from a like net worth perspective, but like, is there going to be a Bitcoin price that's like waking up to a Maserati in your driveway?
No, because I don't.
Not from a material perspective.
I you know, not to dox myself, or I'm very comfortable. I'm not American hodl rich, but I'm not doing too shabby. So, you know, if it's a Maserati that I aspire to.
That's what I mean. Not a Maserati, though. But is there just like some sort of this gleeful moment? Is like, what is that gleeful moment then for you? If it's not Bitcoin, like that Maserati moment, like, is it getting married? Is it traveling? Is it gaming?
I like creating content. I like educating people.
So doing
I
what
like,
you're doing.
Yeah. It's
that's awesome.
I love what I do. I would not change what I do for anything. You know, I'm trying to diversify now. And you know, I started this new startup that has nothing to do with Bitcoin, that I'm getting help from, trying to figure out. Has nothing to do with Bitcoin at all, to try to diversify my income. But man, I love creating content, and I just love what I do, man. I love what I do. I meant every single word in that article. I wish I could give more people more information. Maybe perhaps in the future when I'm confident that it's that information is not going to be used to hurt me.
Sure.
I would be, it was the tip of the iceberg that it revealed 1% of 99%, and the 99% would have shock the crap out of you. And I'll say this, you could put all, it's not just me telling you the story. You'll heard it. You'll hear it from multiple other sources.
Yeah. I appreciate the story immensely. I wasn't really going for any sort of doxification. I really just enjoyed, you know, hearing about the journey and what you learned and what you gained in knowledge and conviction in your own ability to, you know, it sounds like you just, I think I don't really believe in bootstrapping. Like, you can't pick yourself up from your boots, but I do believe in grinding. And I think that there's one of the most important things in life in terms of making something yourself, I think, are, like, you know, persistence and hard work. And I think that so much of it is perspiration. And I think that there's a lot of glory in those minimum wage jobs, and not glory in keeping that job or, you know, but I mean, if that's the only job you can get, I think there's glory in that and doing that really well. I wish people did every job that they did well, even if they hate it. Like, someone is paying you money and you've agreed to that price, whether that price is legit, whether the taxes coming out of it make it not worth it. Like, you made a deal. I believe in grinding, and I believe that, like, smarts aren't going to get you really that far in life. The things I teach my kids first, always kindness, caring, and generosity. But that's really, you know, about, like, friends and family. And it's not just about friends and family, but it's about everybody in humanity. But then the next level that I then teach them is focus, energy, and effort. So I think you've kind of encapsulated all that. And I love this story. I appreciated it so much. And I'm really glad you shared what you did. And I'd love to leave it to you for any parting words.
Yeah, it's definitely go check out that story, guys. And it's not so much because of Bitcoin. It's for those of you that feel like there is no light at the end of the tunnel, for those of you that have lost hope, for those of you that just don't see the clouds parting and the light shining through, that article's for you, right? It was to inspire people. It was to fill people with hope and to remind everybody that as long as there's breath in your lungs, you still have the chance to fight another day, right? And if you continuously position yourself and opportunities to get lucky, eventually you will. And eventually, and hopefully, you will find something that you love. And if you stick through it, you reap what you sow, you will be rewarded eventually.
Yeah, man, I really appreciate you coming on the pod, man, and sharing your story. This has been so dope. Thanks so much, Nico.
Thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it. Hopefully definitely, I can bro. Come back
anytime,
on again.
Anytime, bro. Peace. That was Nico sharing his life story about how Bitcoin gave him purpose right here on the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. And thank you for listening. If you dig the chats, subscribe, like, and review our YouTube channel and wherever you dome your pods. Those reviews are the best way to get the word out so we can keep mining thought-provoking conversations about Bitcoin and life. This is said. Peace out.